The strongest influence on gender role development occurs within the family setting, with parents passing on both overtly and covertly their own beliefs about gender. But when parents get divorced, as they do about 50% of the time these days, the ideas of gender identity they pass on to their children change. So does their parenting. So does a lot.
It's like, I feel like I've just always, this is going to sound really depressing, but been like much more like wary and cautious of like love. I find myself like loving people in my life and sometimes in a really caretaking way.
My mom like sat me down and told me that like it was my responsibility to take care of my brother and then like kind of took on a parental role in regard to both of my parents, and I kind of took on like a liaison role.
For me specifically, it made me become more of like the peacekeeper in my family.
When after they split, I became like really sort of self-reliant, and what I'd say very, very little about like what it is to be like a man or to be masculine. It came from my dad, and most of it just came from like the people that I was around at the time.
I guess I had never really been as dependent on like defense mechanisms as I was after the divorce, just because there was like a lot going on and like no one taught me how to shave. There was a lot of stuff that I just like had to figure out on my own, and there's a lot of stuff that I feel like maybe I still don't know.
Today, more than ever, we seek to analyze how boys and girls are socialized into men and women. And from these so-called broken family units, there's an opportunity to look closely at the ways that mothers and fathers, individually and together, influence their children. And I guess to really get to the roots and through the weeds of this influence, I have to investigate how divorce went on to shape my masculinity. I'll have to see how I fared by, well, asking the culprits themselves, my mom and my dad. Here's our story.
There is a young cowboy.
When your mother and I got divorced, you were 4 years old, and both of us agreed that neither one of us wanted to spend too much time away from you.
Because we were so nervous, me in particular, I would say, about, I was not a child of divorce, so even though your dad was, about how to tell, you know, a 4.5-year-old child that is, I mean, we didn't know what you could understand. So, because your understanding of time when you're 4.5 years old is very not well formed.
The custody arrangement that we ended up with was, you would be with me, I think it was probably Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, and at your mom's initially Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Because that would be good for, you know, for you as a young child. We figured we'd change it as you got older, but you didn't want to.
Of course I didn't want to. They fought so hard to create a sense that I was home no matter which house I lived at. I was an only child. I needed close relationships with each of them. In my early childhood years, they even synchronized the same lullaby. It was Sweet Baby James at my dad's and Sweet Baby James at my mom's.
We had issues about control. Like I once said to him, or he once agreed with me, we once said that the metaphor of our marriage was arguing over where the beach umbrella should be. And I thought about that metaphor and I was like, you know, the thing that we missed was that we were at the beach.
I think that I got married thinking I know who I was and behaving a certain way in the marriage that at that moment felt authentic. And everything changed when we had a child.
Well, I never grew up as a person who wanted to get married and have children. So when it all sort of happened, I was like, oh, all right, I don't know why I'm doing this. Okay. And then all of a sudden I'm pregnant and for the first time in my life, and it's you. And as soon as you were born, it wasn't even a choice. I was just madly in love with you. It's a physical kind of bond, and there's nothing you can do about that. It makes you physically, it's hormonal. It's like you're not even happy you have it, but you're connected to your child in a way that's just beyond description. And I think he was too, but I could never really understand it.
And I have a strong memory of feeling inauthentic for many years. And the crisis of a divorce causes one to either get one shit together or continue to bullshit oneself. And I think I chose to get my shit together.
But I also, you know, was young and strong and wanted to get back to my career. And I'm proud of that. And I want you to have a mother who felt that way. You know, didn't just look into your eyes and think like, oh, my life is complete. All I need to do now is have 10 more of these.
My dad split when I was 13. So it was my mom, my four sisters, my grandmother, and me.
But he also had a desire to be the father he didn't have and to be the son having the father he didn't have.
And growing up in a very feminine household, one of the ways that I learned to belong was behaving in ways that was traditionally more maternal, more female-centric. It never influenced my sense of myself as a man because I thought that's what men do too.
When we were separated, there's no choice that we are going to fall into being who we are. I mean, we were already who we are. We had been together long enough that we weren't like pretending to be other people. It was too late for that.
The real challenge was two different kinds of parenting by two different gendered people. And to many who would observe, they might say that your mom took on a traditionally more paternal role and I took on a more maternal role.
But I guess it makes sense looking back on how and why they divided up things the way that they did.
Every doctor's appointment, every dentist appointment,
or room mom,
every haircut
or snack mom,
PTA meetings, even mommy and me classes, all the things that we might have done together, I just took the responsibility for them and began to do those things in addition to maybe what someone would call more traditional father roles, like coaching a sports team or, you know, throwing a ball. My dad never did those things. My dad was not involved in any way. My dad never threw a ball with me in the backyard. My dad didn't even do the dad stuff with me. So I learned how to be a dad by watching my mom.
I think that the gender roles, you know, in my family weren't so cut and dry. My mother was very much wore the pants in the family. And although my dad went out and made a living, my mother decided everything. My dad was a generation older than my mom. He came from a generation where, like, he took my brother out to throw a ball, but he took me to the ball game. Like, get me a mitt and throw me the ball, you know what I mean? I would have loved to have done that. There were very clear gender roles. My father was not that involved in my life. Not the way dads are with their daughters now, singing, you know, Frozen and stuff.
I used to worry that I would have less of a connection with my mom because of this gender role switch in their parenting styles, but
if you come at motherhood and parenthood from an authentic place in yourself, you're not going to fuck it up. At a certain point, I think I connected with you on a level that was sort of deeper, and I realized that we were going to be okay. I kind of have to put this into the realm of, we also had, like, you know, filet mignon to deal with. We had the best, you know, cut of beef here. So it was like, for both of us and what our particular strengths were, I think you channeled them and made them your own.
There's sometimes I would see that in you. I will see that in you, a complete sense of self, someone who's capable of what might otherwise be female associated traits without being effeminate or feminized. And again, having nothing to do with sexual preference, but having everything to do with behavior in a day-to-day life.
Well, that's who I was. I was a varsity baseball player and a sports freak with plenty of masculine role models in the movies and culture and in my day-to-day life. But in the locker room, nothing would get me more hyped up for a game than a track from Wicked. Yes, Wicked, the musical. Because more than anything, I was an artist born to artists, a theater kid, everywhere. Unabashedly and unapologetically dramatic and emotional and loud. So the playlists look funny on my phone. Neil Young next to Kanye West, next to John Mayer, next to Stephen Schwartz. The Wizard and Lair. My parents could not be more proud.
A lot of my friends who are artists, they have very open relationships with their kids. And so the kids feel really open to say whatever.
This must have been what our relationships were like. My mom and I and my dad and I. Right?
I think you were always very careful about the things you shared. And I mean, there were times you did not want to talk about things and you were like, and I respected that. And there were times when you came to me to talk about things. So I never, you're also very good at hiding your, you know, misery or whatever. So I didn't know unless I asked, and I did ask a lot. I certainly wasn't expecting you to take so long to get over that first love, but I understand it.
Oh, right. Molly's worth mentioning here. I fell in love when I was 14, and for 6 years, I was also someone's serious boyfriend.
Hi, Jack. It's me.
Bouncing home to home, I should give some credit for the comfort that I felt in my masculinity and my sense of self to dating someone absolutely lovely. Molly's 18 in this 2016 voicemail, and we were having a fight about the makeup I was wearing for a musical I'd been in, and she told me.
I love you no matter... makeup or no makeup.
So having her, I made that my most profound emotional experience from age 14 to age 20.
And I just love you a lot.
A real coming of age story.
How else could a juvenile relationship last 6 years if it hadn't been, for both you and your ex-girlfriend, an emotionally deep and rewarding experience? Because otherwise those things break up after a year or two because you think, my favorite color is blue, what's yours?
I think you're a seeker and a searcher. I think you see the world in a much more philosophical kind of meta way than most kids your age. And I think you want to know yourself, which is the most important thing for an artist, is to know themselves, good, bad, and the ugly.
It probably scared the shit out of her, because who goes that deep at 14, 16, even 18? Now, as a young man at 21, it makes more sense. People do go that deep.
When we broke up, I faced an incredibly difficult task on my own for the first time, which was affirming to myself that my sense of self, tinged with a slightly effeminate masculinity and wettened by tears and art, was valid and enough and more than enough. Since Molly left, I've been to my parents for these sorts of conversations more in the last year and a half than in the first 20 years previous. I've made better friends, male and female, who do go that deep with me, and even though I lost a part of my security, I've cleared up a lot for myself.
I understand it, given everything, given your growing up, how you grew up, given who she is, given the whole thing. I don't think it has anything to do with divorce. And given where you went to college, if you'd gone to Brown, you would have met a lot more hot Jewish girls.
Deep breaths. Context.
So I always try to make sure that I'm not lying to myself.
If people know me, they also have to know that my parents are divorced, you know?
I think I'm like pretty adaptable to a lot of situations, and I think I'm just gonna make it work.
I really do think I have good relationships with both of my parents.
A lot of the times I really struggle with my relationship with my parents, but, and like my sister, but like the love is there, and that is what is important.
Deep breaths.
I hope.
Context. Unconditional love. Any advice, guys?
And I think I would have done a very bad job of raising you if I raised a young man who wasn't capable of expressing himself and was in any way uncomfortable with people watching or knowing how he felt.
I think that times are changing, and I think you don't know the answer. You don't know who you're going to end up with. You don't know what kind of woman. You don't know what kind of life.
You would go to sleep, and I would write scripts. That's when I wrote. I wrote while you were asleep. But for many years, without you knowing, I was writing a daily journal to you about our life. I think it started when you were 4. I think it ended when you were 18. And I gave it to you. And if you were to look through the pages of what I wrote to you over those 14 years, most of it's about feelings and emotions and things that you were only 7, so I couldn't really tell you the truth, or things that you might have perceived when you were 11 that you needed to wait and find out about when you were 18, or things that you did that turned me and made me feel like the most blessed man in the world, or times I was profoundly disappointed. So it always was important to me to share my feelings with you. The thing was to make them age appropriate.
So I did dig up my kid, and I found even more context. Unconditional love. Advice. Deep breaths. May 31st, 2002. Jackson's new thing. Dad, you're the best, with a big kiss on the lips. October 12th, 2005. On Monday night, I dropped you off at your mom's house after soccer practice and a late snack, and you erupted, crying like you were a little boy. so filled with deep sadness about something, and when your mom and I questioned you, you told us both that you didn't love staying at your mom's house, that you'd rather stay with me. And I know how hard it must have been to say that, knowing that it might hurt your mom's feelings, but she's so good at listening to your feelings. Hopefully we've made it safe for you to say even potentially hurtful things out loud. June 24th, 2006. And you, my sweet Jackson Prince, you will have some forgiving to do. There will be many ways I piss you off or let you down or overwhelm you, and you'll have to forgive me. After you've gotten good and mad and disappointed, you'll have to forgive your mom. She's doing the best job that she can as well. She may not get you in the way that you need. I may not get you in the way that you need. You may find yourself trying so hard to convince us to let us see you in the way that you want to be seen. You will learn about other men and women, your cousins and your aunts and uncles and your friends and your girlfriends and maybe someday your wife who do get you, who will get you, who will take all of the many ounces that you have to give and appreciate you and know you from the inside out, know all of you the way that you want to be known, know you without you having to try too hard. The world, my son, is without a doubt a better place because you live here. And that much, Jackson Prince, that much everyone, indeed anyone, can see and appreciate and drink in and love you and know you. Rainier Marie Rilke said, "Be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves. Do not now seek the answers which cannot be given to you because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer." Growing up in divorce is generally hard and frustrating and isolating and disorienting, and it confuses the processes that create a sense of self. Growing up in my divorce specifically changed the way that I think about gender, how I think about myself as a man, what that doesn't mean, and what that does mean, and what that can mean. And as time passes, I grow out of my divorce and into meaningful and loving relationships with my mom and with my dad, individually and together, only to be able to uncover even more answers and, perhaps even better, to ask the right questions. I love you.
I love you too.
I love you.
I love you too.